I was a member of Harvard's track team during the year 1922 and the year 1923. And in the year 1922, I held the Harvard record in the javelin throw. I competed in track meets at Annapolis Navy Academy, a track meet at the University of Virginia, the Penn Relays in Philadelphia in both the year 1922 and 1923. I competed in the Intercollegiate Athletic Association National Championships at Philadelphia in 1922 and these same national championships at Cambridge in 1923. I competed against Yale at New Haven in 1923 and against Yale at Harvard in 1922. I competed against Dartmouth and MIT in both years 1922 and 1923, and I competed against Princeton at Princeton in 1922 and against Princeton at Cambridge in 1923. I sang in the Harvard Glee Club during the 1922 season and also the 1923 season. In concert of Glee Clubs from most of the large colleges in the United States, which was a competition to rate the Glee Clubs. This competition was held at Carnegie Hall, New York, and Harvard Glee Club won first place in the year 1922. In the year 1922 and also in 1923, the Harvard Glee Club sang at Symphony Hall, Boston, in concerts with the Boston Symphony Orchestra. We sang at Cleveland with the Cleveland Symphony Orchestra. And we gave concerts both years in Detroit, Buffalo, Washington, Philadelphia, New Haven, Smith College, Princeton, and various cities in New England. I like to recall how I spent my Christmas vacations and Easter vacations the 3 years that I was at Harvard. Before I left for Harvard, the first year that I was going to be there, my father stated that I was not to come home for Christmas vacation or Easter vacation, but instead I was to visit relatives, see the sights which I had not been able to see during the academic year because of the strenuous requirements of the classroom, visit various cities, etc., etc. My first vacation away from home was the Christmas vacation of my sophomore year at Harvard. That year, my father had written to his sister Belle, Isabel, at Hopkinton, Massachusetts, about 30 miles out of Boston, and to his other sister, Aunt Jane, who lived in East Boston on Princeton Street. As a result of his prodding, each of these aunts, Aunt Belle and Aunt Jane, invited me to Christmas dinner, New Year's Day meals, and Sundays. I had a wonderful time with these two wonderful women. They vied with each other to try to give me a better time at their house than at their sister's house, the other aunt. First, I went out to Aunt Belle's house at Hopkinton, where I was met by her granddaughter, her son, and son's wife, and an assortment of other relatives who I had never heard of before. She had made a point of bringing all these relatives together so that I would have a chance to meet all of them. I had a lovely time. I stayed there for 2 or 3 days. Later, I believe it was New Year's Day of that year, I was invited over to Aunt Jane's house on Princeton Street in East Boston. Aunt Jane's husband had been a shipbuilder, but he had died a few years before I came to college. Anyway, she gave me a wonderful time, wonderful food, and did her best to entertain me. During the 3 years, I visited both of these aunts several times, as I always had a good time when I went to see Aunt Belle or Aunt Jane. During my Easter vacation of my second year, my brother was a student at Lafayette College, Easton, Pennsylvania. So when the Easter vacation started, I went down to see him, and he and I visited and had a guided tour through the Bethlehem Steel Company plant at Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and we had good times in Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. And he and I went to shows, legitimate stage shows on Broadway for 3 or 4 nights hand running, and enjoyed ourselves at fancy restaurants in New York. During my senior year, I was invited to Shubenacadie, Nova Scotia, to be the guest of my father's cousin, Libby Braden. Her husband operated the general store in Shubenacadie. Shubenacadie is near to Muscadabit, and probably 35 miles from Halifax, Nova Scotia. Libby Braden was about 40 years old, I would say, as was her husband, and they surely gave me a good time. They had two children living at home. One was a son, Jimmy, and I imagine he was about 10 years old. He took me out into the woods where he had set some snares to catch some rabbits, and he showed me how he did this. He had caught a few rabbits, which we brought home with us to his house. He was an interesting young fellow, and I enjoyed Jimmy very much. But the high spot of my 2 weeks vacation was Jean Kirkpatrick. Oh yes, I kind of got ahead of myself here. Libby Braden, my father's cousin, was married to Jim Kirkpatrick, who owned the general store. So, all these people had as their last name Kirkpatrick. So now I'm going to tell you about the star who I like the most of all the Kirkpatricks, and that was Jean Kirkpatrick. She was 1 year older than I was, and she surely gave me a good time. She took me to dances, she took me to roller skating, she took me to ice skating, she took me to fishing in the Shubenacadie River, where we caught eels. The Shubenacadie River is affected by the tide from the ocean, the Bay of Fundy, and therefore had a very large difference in elevation when the tide was in or out. I had never gone fishing for eels before. We did not eat the eels, but we had a lot of fun catching eels in the Shubenacadie River. She took me for sleigh rides in her cutter with her high-spirited horse, and she let me drive the horse. And I hugged her a little bit and kissed her, and I had a wonderful time. I guess she'd be my second cousin, probably. Anyway, I liked Jean Kirkpatrick very much, and she put the frosting on the cake for that vacation that year. That was in the Christmas vacation. I will always remember with a great deal of fondness that vacation in Shubenacadie, Nova Scotia. The other days of our vacations, which were not holidays, I would spend looking at the historic sites around Boston, Philadelphia, and my father was very generous in stating that I could go any place I wanted to in the East during any of these vacations. Now I'll tell you about the theaters. Of course, many of the shows that end up on Broadway have their tryouts in Boston. So there were always four or five theaters in Boston which had the legitimate stage theaters. Were legitimate stage shows. I did not miss very many of these shows, and often would go either taking a girl with me on a date or I would go with some of my friends at Harvard. I like to recall Irene McKinney. I took her to the musical comedy Irene, and in her honor, I took Geneva Simmons, who went to Simmons College in Boston, who I had more than three dates with. I took her to the theater one time. I'd go Dutch Treat with different college friends. One of my best friends at Harvard was Kenneth Bourne, B-O-U-R-N-E. My roommate, Jim Martindale, my roommate in my junior year, Edgar Hirschman. I would go quite frequently to the legitimate stage shows with any one of these three men. During the Christmas and Easter holiday vacations, I spent a considerable amount of time in the Widener Memorial Library at Harvard. Reading novels. Mostly classics or well-known stories which had the proof of time. I know of no period in my life when I did more reading of the old stories of literature. And since I was relaxing on all six of these vacations, I had a great deal of pleasure in Widener Memorial Library. From 1939 to 1941, when I was 40 years old, I read several biographies. Lincoln Steffens, S-T-E-F-F-E-N-S, was the author of a book about muckraking. And attempts by businessmen to improve the functioning of their city, county, and state government. Another book entitled A Time for Greatness set forth what businessmen acting together can do to improve the operation of their city, state, and local government. I was impressed by the fact that government has a terrific impact on the lives of citizens, and therefore it behooves the Christian to bring to bear the ounces of his power and influence in that field. As a watchdog of the actions of elected officials, during the 1939-1941 period, Richard C. Raines preached inspirational sermons to the point that a Christian businessman should act effectively in the field of government, in addition to acting effectively in support of charities and his religion. Having attained a position of power, knowledge, and influence in the business community, I acted effectively. When I was a boy, 6 to 12 years old, the Leck family had a lot of fun, and each member of the family had certain work to perform. Each winter, my father built a toboggan slide. On the hilltop at the intersection of Rustic Lodge Avenue and Wentworth Avenue, it was built of salvaged lumber from my father's construction projects. The Leck children and each of the other kids for blocks around would climb the steps of the toboggan slide, take a belly flop onto his or her flexible flyer sled, and coast at breakneck speed down the slide, down the Wentworth Avenue hill to one half block below 48th Street. On an iced runway on the slide and hill, the Leck kids and the neighbor kids made the iced runway with snow and pails of water. And it took many hours of work by all of the kids after school hours and on Saturdays to make this iced runway lightning fast. When I was older, 12 to 16 years old, the Lyndhurst Coasting Club, consisting of parents and children living in Lyndhurst, iced a track down 48th Street, starting at Colfax Avenue to Minnehaha Parkway, and along the parkway almost to Lake Harriet. Homemade bobsleds were built by each family, which would carry up to 6 children and adults down the fast track. It took a lot of work by everyone, kids and adults, to have these thrilling rides. Carl Campbell, 4 years older than me, 4 years older than I was at that time, was skilled with tools, and he made the fastest ice boat on Lake Harriet, which everyone in the neighborhood enjoyed. Ice skating and ice hockey were enjoyed on Diamond Lake and Lake Harriet. The Cedar Lake Ice Company delivered by teams of horses and wagons 100-pound chunks of ice to each family home. The ice man would notice a cardboard sign in the front window of each house, which designated whether he should cut off a 25-pound piece or a 50-pound piece or a 75-pound piece to fit into the ice chamber of the refrigerator. When he had cut the desired size in the wagon, the iceman would set ice tongs into the chunk, hoist the tongs and the chunk of ice to his shoulders, and carry the chunk of ice to the back porch, where he opened the ice compartment door and placed the big chunk of ice inside the compartment, chiseling off any protruding corners which might be in the way. On hot summer days, the kids would follow the iceman's wagon and pick up slivers of ice to suck. The Depression started with the stock market crash in late October 1929, about 55 years ago, when I was 27 years old. The stock market prices were going up and up in 1928 and 29, and the construction business was active in 26, 27, and 28. But was slowing down nationally in 1929. Within a few weeks, in late October 1929, Radio Corporation of America stock dropped from $549 per share to $56 per share. And the other stocks traded on the New York Stock Exchange dropped from 70% to 90%. During a one-week period, thousands of fortunes were wiped out and corporations went into bankruptcy. Many investors saw their paper fortunes collapse, their life savings gone, and investors in stocks and businessmen committed suicide when they saw their fortunes disappear. I had no investments in stocks or bonds traded on the New York Stock Exchange in 1929. All of my net worth in 1929 was in James Leck Company stock, bank accounts, and income-producing real estate. My brother, my two sisters, my mother, James Leck Company, and the estate of James Leck had nothing invested in stocks and bonds traded in the New York Stock Exchange in 1929, and all their net worths were in bank accounts, James Leck Company stock, their homes, income-producing real estate. The Lecks, therefore, lost nothing in the stock market crash of 1929. We, therefore, were in a liquid, financially sound condition with no debts, so that we and James Leck Company could take on the large contracts which have been mentioned elsewhere on these tapes. In 1933, at the bottom of the Depression, I, James, and my sisters and my mother purchased the James Leck Company stock, which was in the James Leck estate, for cash, at a bargain price. Thereby settling out of court a lawsuit brought by First National Bank against my father's estate. My father had personally endorsed some mortgage notes of Nicholas Syndicate Incorporated, and First National Bank tied up the distribution of my father's estate until the five of us used much of our cash on hand to liquidate the estate, pay the discounted claim, and close the estate. After the Minnesota Loan and Trust Company, executors of the estate, and the attorneys for the estate had been paid their fees for a four-year period, and after my mother had received her bequest from the estate, there was very little distributed from my father's estate to me, my brothers and sisters. But the James Leck Company stock, which I, my brothers, my sister, and my mother now owned, namely 100% of outstanding stock, represented a liquid going business concern, the vehicle which I and my brother would continue to operate to produce a good living for our families from 1929 through 1969, 41 years. During the years 1930 and 1931, after the stock market crash, city business of all kinds experienced a sickening downward plunge as the months went by, with the result that many businesses failed and most other businesses were suffering heavy losses. This resulted in massive layoffs of employees, great unemployment, also extreme wage and salary cuts. By late 1931, long lines of the unemployed could be seen in all cities, seeking employment, which was not available. Two or more related families would double up in single apartments to save rent money. Carpenters' wages dropped 87 cents per hour, brick masons to $1 per hour, construction laborers to 60 cents per hour, from rates which had been more than double those figures. In early 1933, all banks and stock markets closed for a few days by U.S. government order. But James Leck Company kept on erecting buildings. Our employees were never out of work, but the layoffs of other companies caused extreme hardship for their employees. Many architects and engineering firms and general construction firms went out of business for much of 1931 and 1932, as there were very few projects started in that period in the cities. By late 1933, the U.S. government had set up Public Works Administration, PWA, which financed federal, state, county, and city building projects. In 1933, 1934, 1935, we bid and built many buildings under PWA financing in Wisconsin, Michigan, Montana, Iowa, and Minnesota, in addition to the paper mills and match factories, which I have mentioned on other tapes. See History of Lake Leck Family, namely chapter entitled Events in the Life of Stuart W. Leck, or projects solicited, bid, negotiated, and erected during the years 1930 through 1937, the Depression years, and for projects in 1923 through 1928, when I was gaining the experience and knowledge of large building construction necessary to overcome the problems of the Depression years.